You're listening to a Day1.fm show.
Pick My Brain is the podcast where founders pitch me their startup and I try to give them some useful advice so they can connect better with potential co-founders, investors, media, and of course, customers. My name's Alan Jones and I was a founder myself for about 15 years, and after that an angel investor for another 15 years, so yeah, old. Some of my ventures have been successful and some failed disastrously, but I like to think I've learned a thing or two along the way, and maybe some of that can help you. So if you'd like to learn how to tweak your pitch, subscribe to the Pick My Brain show now, wherever you like to listen to podcasts.
If you're building a SaaS business, achieving compliance with SOC 2, ISO 27001, or other in-demand frameworks can unlock major growth for your company and establish customer trust. However, this process is often time-intensive and very costly. Vanta automates up to 90% compliance, getting you audit ready quickly and saving up to 85% of associated costs. And Vanta scales with your business with a market-leading trust management platform to help you continually monitor compliance, unify risk management, and streamline security reviews. Join 7,000 global companies like Atlassian and Dovetail that use Vanta to build trust and prove security in real time. My listeners get 10% off Vanta when they go to vanta.com/fun. That's vanta.com/fun. Hi, I'm Chris Titley and this is FinTech Fun, the podcast where I speak with Australian fintech founders and executive management and have some fun along the way, gaining insights about the person behind the brand. FinTech Fun is part of Day One, the network dedicated to founders, operators and investors. I'm joined by Jeremy Hastings, founder of Huttly. Jeremy, thanks so much for coming into the studio.
Thanks very much for having me, Chris.
Jeremy, Huttly, let's go back to the inception of the idea, the early days, how the business began.
Yeah, I might go back even a tiny bit earlier than that. So at the time, I finished up at Rio Tinto, or just prior to finishing at Rio Tinto, I started a gelato espresso bar. And in the second year, we sold 17 tons of gelato. So
wow.
There's a reason.
Okay. Right.
Well, Gladstone's a little bit overweight, probably I contributed to that. But
What was the key flavour?
Our three big ones, boysenberry, salted caramel, and your chocolate and vanilla.
Yeah, right.
Went well as well. Yeah. So, and then grew that into a restaurant wine bar, had about 25 staff, 140 seats, and a general manager looking after that business, and found myself a little bit bored, which is never great for a founder. So I was having a glass of wine with my cousin who was complaining about his property manager, and it brought back all these memories growing up. Grew up in Sydney, single mum, four kids. We moved a little bit and mum did her absolute best and hats off to her. But we experienced firsthand, I guess, the stress and pressure of someone owning or renting a home and saying, if I put in a maintenance request, will my rent go up? You know, when this lease ends, will be there another property to move into? And then I also reflected on a time where my wife and I had an investment property in Parkes in central New South Wales where we met. She grew up on a farm. And we chose the property manager because I played rugby with him, and fantastic rugby player, but a terrible property manager. And so we moved to another property manager who was then caught with his hand in a trust jar and stole a couple hundred thousand dollars, went to prison. We reached out to our tenant to find out that they had been paying rent. The property manager had been telling us that they were doing it tough and hadn't been able to pay, but they had been paying. And they also didn't have a working stove and a hole in their ceiling. So it's one of these moments where I reflected and went, geez, you know, this agent or property manager in the middle has caused a fair bit of financial pain for me personally. But more importantly, I looked at the stress that people go through when it comes to renting a home. And
yep.
And so Huttly was really born on the concept that everybody deserves a safe, stable and certain home, no matter what their circumstances are. So we're solving the problem of shelter is probably the best way to put it.
And Jeremy, when you saw that problem and you thought, oh, here's, you know, let's try and get a solution for it, what was the sort of the transition between, like, you know, you going to work somewhere else or a full-time corporate job to then going, actually, I'll start something?
Yeah, so I'd left Rio by now and had been 2 years, a couple of years more than that, 2 years out working in the restaurant wine bar. So I'd already been a couple of years out of the corporate side. But then I found myself, I said, oh, this tech thing is there's something to this. You know, if I expand the gelato bar across 10 locations, that's $10 million of capital, 70 staff and not a huge return. And then I said, oh, well, you know, tech, you can serve an unlimited market with absolute ease from you know, from anywhere,
yep,
and access a global market. And I just, that made sense to me from a business perspective. So I built a deck at the time. This is 2018, so this is kind of before the tech boom that we went through. It was sort of the very start of it. Built a deck and it was terrible. I saw it the other day and I was like, oh, that is horrible. And so,
you know what? I thought to myself the other day, it'd be actually a great idea to get the decks of some of these companies, like, and just put them up and just sort of like, not sort of laugh in retrospect, but just go that where the business has gone from. I'm sure like Afterpay's first deck and a few, I've seen Airbnbs.
I saw Airbnbs the other day. And I was like, oh, wow.
Maybe we should do it for Australian businesses too. So yeah, I'd love a copy if you don't mind.
I'll happily hand it over. It's shocking. So, but we managed to raise capital off it. So I very luckily had a sort of a seed investor who was the owner of the building where the restaurant wine bar is, and he'd seen me work in that business for a number of years since 2014 through to 2018. And I shared the deck with him on the back of a license issue we're having with the restaurant. And I said, I'm going to raise money on Monday in Sydney and Tuesday. And so I flew to Sydney on the Monday. I get a call from him about 5 p.m. in the afternoon. You know, Jeremy, how did it go? And I said, oh, you know, it's going, you know, as planned, meeting more investors tomorrow. And he goes, oh, I've got 750 grand. And so he called a couple of mates over the weekend who turned out, one owned a high-rise in Hawaii, Montreal and the Gold Coast. Another one owned a sugar plantation in the U.S. and or sugar refinery in the U.S. and did the call around to a couple of mates and raised the capital.
Wow.
So I raised 750 on day one. Day two, they met with
a little slower on day two.
Well, it was a little bit slower. So I met with our Beachhead Venture Capital, who's still on our cap table and have followed every round since. But they put in 430, so raised about 1.8 mil in the space of 48 hours. And so I went from, geez, we've got this, you know, idea, and now we've got some capital. And what we quickly realised that some of our early assumptions were very wrong. And so my original view is, why is there a property manager and agent? Can we replace them entirely? And that was not correct. You know, what we learned in our research and in that first early days or early year of Huttley was that people don't want to be accountable for the biggest financial decision or nest egg in their life. They kind of need that intermediary. They need somebody there who can take them on the emotional journey.
Yeah, true. Yep.
Now, what we did realize, though, was that doesn't mean the way it works right now is functional. And it certainly isn't. You've got an intermediary who spends more time dealing with transaction noise and crisis and less time on the human at either end of the transaction. And we said, okay, if we can bring efficiency to that process and solve
it. Instead of replacing it. Efficiency
exactly right,
versus replacing, yeah.
And just get a better outcome in the relationship between all the parties. So we turned our attention to smart contracts and turned our attention to the real estate contract more broadly. And you sort of fast forward today and we're doing 1 million contracts a year and 47% of the East Coast now using the platform.
Wow. Two questions on that. One is, how did the name Huttley come about? We'll do that first.
Yeah. So originally it was R Smart, which sounds a little bit like Ars Smart. And so when I met with that investor.
How do you spell that?
It was R and then S-M-A-R-T. So R Smart. And then when I met with the investor, Beachhead Venture Capital, I remember walking into their boardroom and they'd drawn an ass on the wall before I got there.
Right.
To politely rubbed it off, but you could still see the
and
outline.
You, and we're meeting with the Ars company.
Yeah, exactly right. I pointed to it about 15 minutes into the pitch and I said, look, we're changing the name. And they all burst out laughing. And so we then changed the name to Igloo Co. And Igloo was, you know, we'll keep you out of the cold, was sort of
the
genesis.
That's very metaphorical.
Yeah, and so as the business grew, we realised we had 46 trademark infringements.
Oh, right,
so
okay.
had to move away from that. So I then put it to the team at the time. I said, okay, we need to change the name. A .com would be great. And it's got to represent shelter in some way. And so the team really focused on hut. It embodies a village. It embodies how we want to work as a business. And it also represents sort of the rudimentary concept of shelter. And so Huttley was born from
excellent. That's a great story behind the name. And the second thing, you mentioned smart contracts now, and you're doing 1 million of them a year. For the listeners out there that don't understand smart contracts and exactly what Huttley does, can you explain that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we saw, you know, you've got this paper-based PDF document that traditionally was living in the filing cabinet. And that document or that real estate contract across commercial, sales and residential leasing has a whole lot of value attached to it. You know, you've got the data that gets generated from it. You've got financial transactions, which is where all of the financial decisions stem from. And it's also the only intersect in real estate where all the parties, a vendor, buyer, landlord, tenant, agent or property manager, are obligated to transact. So we saw this contract is kind of crucial, the nexus of value to real estate. Now, a smart contract is saying, okay, well, you know, a smart contract is blockchain, which I don't generally talk too much to blockchain, but I'm more than happy to. But we looked at Ricardian smart contracts. So how do you take elements of a PDF contract or of a base contract and use blockchain where it makes sense, but for the rest use what's Web 2 or just cloud-based technology? Yep. So a smart contract essentially now, well, we do Ricardian smart contracts is we take elements out like payments, for example, or the bond, and we turn that into a smart contract, which essentially just brings the end users closer and a more efficient way to transact.
Right. And then, you know, going through COVID and the period of sort of unprecedented uncertainty through that, how did you manage that and how have you come out the other side to where we are now, which is, you know, a rental crisis and a cost of living crisis and, you know, shortage of accommodation?
Yeah, today's problem is really interesting. And it was I was at the down in Hobart a couple of weeks ago listening to the Assistant Governor, Sarah Hunter, from the RBA, talking to sort of the crisis we find ourselves in. And a little bit stemmed from COVID. So COVID resulted in a whole lot of supply issues. So you had restriction in construction materials. You had a global slowdown in the ability to access those materials. And that has extended to where we are now. So pre-COVID, the number of people per property was 2.8 and now it's 2.2. And that drop-off, with the RBA expected to bounce back, but it didn't bounce back. And that's mainly because people need an office at home. And so that third, fourth room is being utilised for work.
Yep.
Coupled with that was, you know, apart from the slowdown in the construction industry and access to materials, which increased the price of building, was that the forecast of the Australian population back in 2015 was that we're going to hit 27 million in 2040. We hit that in 2019.
Right.
And so the fundamental assumptions around Australian population was out. And so you fast forward to where we are now and we're in a crisis. We there's no supply. There's no supply coming through, not at the magnitude that we need. You've got different restrictions in the ecosystem, such as local governments are looking after planning and that process can be slow and cumbersome, coupled with, you know, all the other pressures that the market's experiencing. So I think COVID was interesting for Huttley. Like we were a little bit worried going to it. You know, what happens to real estate?
Mm.
And it's one of those things that is
like
very
everyone
dependent
was. And
on
what happens to the banks as well at the time as well.
Yes, yeah. And funnily enough, real estate improved, didn't go down as everyone expected. And then on the back of COVID, it just kept going up. And so we saw not much change at all. We fortunately moved to subscription-based pricing pre-COVID. We were previously form-based pricing. Had we been form-based pricing, we would have seen a drop in volume and therefore revenue, but we'd moved to subscription prior to COVID. So we were a bit recession-proof by that stage. But post-COVID now, looking at the market, we're in an interesting place. And I don't see, there is no silver bullet. All we can do is look at products like Bondable to how do we actually make the process better for tenants and solve for some of those pain points in the existing ecosystem while the supply issue works its way through.
Two questions on Huttley. Why do you think people have accepted your product and it's going really well? And secondly, in terms of collaboration with other partners, how important has that been?
Yeah, we've learned the hard way on collaboration. Some early lessons in a trial that we ran in Queensland. We were very early as a company and our maturity wasn't there to be able to serve, you know, the early proof of concept that we had. And so we took a lot of learnings from that and applied it to our new partnership in Victoria. The REIV have been an amazing partner. We're a finalist for the FinTech Awards this Thursday night, the Finnies, for the partnership that we have built with the REIV. If you look at some broad metrics, you know, we've increased their subscriber base by 47% without a sales team. We've increased their revenue from, you know, by 26% over the same period. But more importantly, what we've done is we've built member-first technology. So we've brought solutions to the hands of members that make their business more efficient and better. So Huttley is really where we've seen growth and traction in the market is we're all about compliance. You know, really boring, but we're about compliant real estate contracts and how do you then facilitate the relationship of everybody over the top of that in a way that leads to a good outcome for everybody? So we've just built, you know, really product-led growth. I hate that term, but we've seen that on our side. And we're now only just now 5 years into the journey. We've just hired a general manager of growth and a BDM and team. And we've never done that before, never had to. But we've just seen great success. So we thought, okay, now it's time to invest in that growth.
You feel like you've grown up as a business and now it's like, put the foot down, full throttle, scale, scale, scale.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So the last 6 months I have, it's been interesting. We've got to bring talent in. So we're at the stage where we're bringing in people that 3 years ago, there's no way they would have looked at, we would have been too risky and too early. Yep. But we've now brought in, our CTO is the ex-general manager of architecture and technology for Pexus around the exchange business, John. He's fantastic. He's brought a level of skill and experience and knowledge to the business that we would not have been able to get organically.
Yeah, and as a sole founder, I think that gives you sort of good comfort around the business as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. Until he points out all the problems and then you're like, okay, we've got to fix it. We've got a few things to
go
fix.
Go to the founder. There's only one of them.
And then we've brought on a general manager of growth, as I mentioned, Sally, who's phenomenal. Di's come in as our CMO. And then we've got Joel as well on the team. So it's been we've got the right team now for the next horizon, which has been a process of probably 4 or 5 months to get there, but we're certainly now equipped to grow.
Let's talk about the next horizon. What are the plans for Huttley moving forward in the next 12 months or so?
Yeah, absolutely. So we acquired a company called ADL Forms and we're migrating them to what we call the One Huttley platform. So bringing all of our solutions into one platform, and that gives us the ability to cross-sell, upsell and do a whole lot with the platform more broadly. I will also bring our data business. We own a company called propertydata.com.au, which is one of the largest data companies in Victoria for real estate. So we put the market clearance rates to Channel 7 on a Saturday night and The Age on a Sunday. So we're bringing that data business into the one platform as well. So a big part of this horizon is really the streamlining of our business. The second one is, as we do that, we'll be bringing more contract volume through our established revenue channels, such as utility connections, et cetera, which will see an uptick in revenue. And then the third project that we're working on, which is still, you know, we're not far off doing a proof of concept, but a Huttley Pay, which is how do we solve for some of the really inefficient and high-risk areas when it comes to transacting real estate? And one of those is payments, how money moves.
Yeah, right. The intersection between prop tech and fintech.
Yes, yeah. So we're more of a fintech company than a prop tech, and it's only now that we do about $18 billion a year of contract value on Huttley, and so now it's activating payments on the back of that volume.
And Jeremy, as a sole founder of a business, we don't come across too many of them. The listeners out there, is there something out there that you've got a little secret hobby that not many people know about when you try to switch off from managing all these different things and scaling the business and managing staff and growing the business in different areas? What's a little secret out there that not many people know?
Yeah, I would have had a whole lot of shame attached to this 4 or 5 years ago, but I'm now a full convert. But I played rugby union for 20-odd years, and then about 4 years ago, a good mate, Cameron, said to me, oh, you know, you should give AFL a go. And I was like, oh, no, that's you know, sacrilege. And so I went to my first AFL training session at Morningside Panthers for the Supercats, the over-35s, and the culture was just phenomenal. There was 70-odd blokes at training. Everybody was around each other. It was all about footy for fun and the mental health benefits that come from that. And I just found this really supportive club. And so I've played since then.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Have you ever played the Wilston Grange Gorillas?
I have. I've beaten them and lost to them. So
I've got a mate in the over-35s team that plays for them. My son plays out there and had his 50th game last week. So
oh,
a bit
fantastic.
Of a milestone.
Oh, good on him. Yeah, wow. Yeah.
But, again, like the culture of that particular club and AFL in general is again, from someone like myself that grew up playing cricket and basketball, very unique.
And I now give back a little bit. So I coach the under-9s. I've been coaching for 3 years. I call myself a participating parent because I think a coach is a stretch considering my lack of background in AFL, but I've got a high-performance coaching team around me. So there's three other parents.
Yeah, for the under-9s.
That have played before and know what they're doing.
How have
doing,
they gone so far?
So we're not allowed to score. But
that's right, there's no win-loss.
If you ask the kids, we've won every game. I'm 3 years into coaching that team and really enjoy it. Like you see the kids just every week, something clicks with one of them and they turn a corner in a positive way and you get around that and celebrate it. It's a really nice experience.
And you're in the stage of playing other clubs yet, or are you still on the playing?
No, we play other clubs. So we play Cooperoo. There's a few clubs that we play.
And you do mids, so backs and forwards, that's the position?
Yeah, we do. Yeah. So under nines, we're now, you still stay in your zones, but you can tackle now. Which has been a big shock to the kids. Probably a good shock to them because last year, they got too confident just carrying the ball and didn't get the concept. They've actually got to let go of it. You've got to find a player and push or kick to space. And And this year they've learned very quickly that the way they've gone the last few years is no longer the way. But next year it's full, you know, it's
three-quarters field. And that's what my son plays now at the moment. It's an interesting one. And then within that team you probably have a lot of people supporting different clubs and they come from Melbourne and Sydney, et cetera. Who's your team?
Yeah, so I asked one of the kids the other day, I said, oh, are you going for the Lions? And he was absolutely disgusted. He was a Collingwood supporter. So, he looked at me like I was the devil. So, but funnily enough, like I'm torn. I felt like I should go for the Brisbane Lions. I'm from Sydney originally, but have...
Well, halfway, you know, between, yeah.
Exactly right.
Melbourne, yeah.
For the Lions, I felt like I should go for Lions. And I went to a 40th and I was told that you need to have a deeper connection to a club. And my brother-in-law, their family, are diehard Demon supporters. They sang the song at his wedding when he married my sister. Yeah. Like, I think his father was on the board of the MCG and his brother was the president of the Demons. So it's a really strong connection. Yeah. And so when I shared that with one of the players at Morningside, he goes, mate, you have no choice but to be a Demon supporter. And the next day, word had got around and someone dropped off a whole lot of merch to me, so I felt obligated. Now I've got a whole lot of scarves for the Demons.
And you follow the AFL now more or not really? Still follow the Union?
I watch probably more AFL than Union now. Yeah. So I watch the big Union games, so the Wallabies play, etc. But I tend to watch more of the AFL week in, week out.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating paradigm shift from junior participation here in Australia and watching it comparing to my era growing up and your era growing up. You know, with Union being so strong and the World Cup, you know, wins that Australia had, and now we haven't won the Bledisloe for 20 years, it's 21 years.
It's embarrassing now.
Yeah. Since John Eales and those days. And then also now with, the programs such as AusKick and whatnot really engaging the kids. And Brisbane obviously making the final last year put us on in terms of the map. But I get out to the Gabba. It's quite a good atmosphere the Lions. Yeah,
great atmosphere. Yeah. They fill the stadium. AFL just has nailed the concept of grassroots footy. Mm. And they've done it well for over a decade. It's everybody volunteers their time, gets involved, and my kids every year get another footy.
And the backpack and the footy and the trading cards.
It's just clever. Like whoever... Is that the AFL doing this? Needs to.
Well, they should listen to this podcast firstly to get get the clicks up.
Of course, they're going to listen. Yeah.
Right, Jeremy, thanks so much for coming and having a chat about Huttley from negative day one to day one to where we are now in terms of the growth and the scale of the business and where you want to take the business. And congratulations on what you've achieved. And really looking forward to tracking the progress.
Oh, thanks very much, Chris, and thanks for having me.